Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, August 27th, 2014. And with me today, I have two awesomely talented people, Kelly Gumont. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Jeff.
And John Martellaro. Hey there, John.
Hi, Wizard. This is the Guru. Good morning.
We'll get you a t-shirt sometime that says Guru.
Ah, nice.
And we could put it in a bowl with some pasta, and we'll call you the Raguru. And
oh.
I can't believe I just did that. Oh, my God. I apologize to
for
everyone
shame.
For that joke. I am so sorry.
Well, I'm the guy with the special sauce anyway, so, you know.
There is that. And you can take that any way you please.
Indeed.
All right. So there's two things that I'm really interested in talking about today. And both of them, I know we could go on forever. And considering it's the three of us, this is going to be a challenge to actually fit both topics in.
Yes.
And the first topic I wanted to take a look at is one that that John, I'm certain you will have something to say about it. And it's this report that that there's new insider information that Apple is getting ready to start production sometime in the first quarter of 2015 on a 12.9-inch iPad.
I read that report, and I've been following that, and I've been writing about that. As you know, I'm a big fan of the potential 12.9-inch iPad. There are some issues with perhaps the innovation level and new features and what's compelling. People who have iPad 4s and iPad Airs may not necessarily find it important to upgrade to the next iPad. But from a market perspective, the way I see it is that if Apple's going to expand their sales, they're not going to do it by getting people with iPad Airs to buy an iPad Air 2. They're going to expand their sales by opening up new markets. And I've written about this too. And I made a list of those areas where I think Apple can really take advantage of a larger display. There's just some things that aren't convenient on a small display. For example, the military, education, instruction, real estate sales, hotel management, point of sale, both displays and point of sale areas and cash registers, aviation, bigger maps, more room to see what you've got on your lap. The magazine industry, of course, we've talked about that. We did a show on it. Laboratory work, more room for display of information to a group. And also content creation. The article I read talked about, of course, multi-windows perhaps on a 12.9-inch display and the extensions features that allow you to start cooking up new content by integrating data from different sources and start making a better content creation tool. So I'm a big fan of that 12.9-inch form factor. And I think what happened with Apple was is we heard rumors as they tested it, and now we're hearing rumors as they start to get into production in order to ramp up their sales.
You know, the thing for me with the 12.9-inch form factor, and I will couch this with the caveat that I don't know if I would like that size or not. But the deal is, at some point, the size and the weight becomes a factor in determining how much horsepower I'm going to want. So is a 12.9-inch screen going to be big enough and come with enough weight that I would rather have the same size and weight in, say, a laptop?
Well, you know, it starts to become a PC replacement because there are a lot of people who have smaller notebooks or they have not so big displays. You know, I imagine there are people who are using PCs with 15-inch flat panels and haven't upgraded to anything bigger, and especially in the office space where displays tend to be smaller. And so as soon as you start building an iPad with an almost 13-inch screen, you're going to carve an even bigger piece, cannibalize even more of the PC market. So you open new markets, you cannibalize the PCs. I see it as a win-win.
Sure, I can see where it could be a win-win. I'm just curious, at what point for the majority of people do we hit the tipping point where they're like, you know, this is big enough that I would rather carry a laptop instead? I don't know what that tipping point is.
Wouldn't that be bigger than a MacBook Air? The 11-inch Air?
Maybe. But, you know, you can lay an iPad Air on top of a MacBook, 11-inch MacBook Air, and they are not, in the grand scheme of things, that much different in size.
I mean, yes, right, that, so a bigger iPad bigger, would be but, a large would be an even larger screen than an 11-inch Air.
Right, and is that a breaking point or a tipping point where people would rather carry the Air instead because then they can run Photoshop or...
Yeah, I think the tipping point is when you can start to create the content that you were creating with Yosemite or OS X, whatever you have. When that happens, then I think there'll be a gentle, natural migration towards using larger iPads where we set them up on a stand and maybe we have a 13-inch or 12.9-inch iPad on a stand, Bluetooth keyboard, maybe an attached large display, and now we're doing all our work on the iPad and our writing and our creation, and then we walk out the door with the 12-inch iPad if we need it, or its smaller brother, and if we want to do that.
I'm kind of thinking this is where Microsoft has been hoping they could go with the Surface, but I don't think that they are implementing in such a way that it will be a successful effort.
Yeah,
I'm not going to say that I don't think this exists. I'm sure that it does. I'm sure that there are crazy large iPads and crazy small iPads or crazy large iPhones, however you want to draw that line. There are probably MacBook Airs with 3G in them, just like the iPads have, where, you know, you wouldn't need tethering in order to get to use your computer on the internet whenever you needed to. All those things exist. They're just not things that Apple sells for whatever reason. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when I start hearing more of these stories, first of all, it's August, which is traditionally a slow time for all kinds of news. And I start wondering if something like this isn't some sort of elaborate trolling set up by, like, Gene Munster, who is tired of getting laughed at for his wish of an Apple TV, and so he's dangling other stuff out there in front of people just to see what will happen when it gets taken away. Because that's not conspiracy theorist at all.
No.
I just wonder sometimes the likelihood. Like, does this thing exist? I'm pretty sure it does. Is Apple making them in quantities with which they hope to sell to other people? Maybe not so much. I'm kind of not a believer in this one. And I won't be until Tim gets up on stage and says, hey, look at the shiny new iPad. Oh. It's ginormous, just like the new iPhone is ginormous. Like, I'm going to say no.
If you were Tim Cook, how would you increase your iPad sales in order to make the company look good and get the analysts off your back and to prosper in a critical technology area for your company? What would you do with the iPad?
Why do they need to increase? They're still selling a not insignificant number of iPads every single quarter.
Well, if
I mean, it would be nice to sell more.
A market is either on the climbing part of the Gaussian curve or it's on the descending part of the Gaussian curve. And you don't want to be on the descending part. So it's a natural thing to develop the product and the technology so that the product continues to grow and prosper. And as I said before, you know, can take over some of the load for content creation. The last thing you want to do is just sit back and say, well, we don't know what to do next, and we'll let the product just sort of vaporize.
I think, well, first of all, there's a lot of cannibalization happening on the low-end market, particularly the low-end PC market. Virtually everyone in my family who has picked up an iPad, picked it up in lieu of picking up a PC. Not a Mac, not a computer. Specifically, instead of getting a new Windows machine, I'm going to just get this iPad instead.
Absolutely. But how many of those people can you go after if the screen isn't big enough? And they're used to maybe a 21-inch display on their PC, and now you want to push them into a 9.7-inch display on their PC replacement, that's going to be a tough sell.
You won't use that tablet in the same way that you use a laptop or desktop computer.
Well, if you're lightweight, you will. So, and that's why it's working for some of my family. So I look at the book face, I like the email, and I want to play a slot machine game, a solitaire game, whatever the game is that they want to play. You know, that's most of it. And then when the grandkids come over, I can set them up on the YouTube. Because everything's a definite article in my family. It's the email, the YouTube. I give it to, you know, give it to the kids, and the kids can watch the YouTube for a little while, and then I can continue watching whatever I'm watching on TV. Everybody wins. So for people who technically have lightweight needs, then for them it's awesome. And it's a really good way to have it have their computing device with them all the time.
Sure, but what do you do when the market's saturated? What new technology can we bring to bear in iPads that will get everybody to drop their jaws and say, oh, I'm dumping my old iPad?
I don't know that it's going to necessarily be a new technology. Jeff, go ahead and talk. You've been trying so hard.
I've been trying so hard, and I've been so nice to let you guys go. All right, so I'm sitting here thinking, what if the thing about bigger screens isn't so much that there's a market demand for it, but that it's analysts and pundits saying Apple has to do this or the market has to do this because that's what people want. And it isn't really an issue where consumers want it, but that analysts and pundits are saying this is what has to happen. And if that's the case, then making a 12-inch, 13-inch, whatever iPad would be a bad move for Apple because it's not going to sell in reasonable quantities because people wouldn't want it.
We know how closely Apple listens to the analysts and the pundits, right?
Precisely. But I think what's going to happen, this is my assessment of the current state of the iPad. I don't believe that there is a new technology that will come to it that will make it something new and exciting. I mean, remember when almost to a person, when the iPad debuted, went, there's no camera on that thing. And then we got the second one that not only had the camera, but had the Retina display.
Third one.
Then we got the third generation, which was, which again, Retina display, looks really nice. I think they upped the capacity at that point. What's going to have to happen is it's going to end up being capacity. I think what's going to happen is the next generation of iPad isn't going to have a new technology because I think at this point it is a reasonably mature technology. I think what they're really going to get is like the 128 iPad, the 256 iPad, whatever it is, as soon as they can figure out. And remember, this is a nut that Tim has cracked in the past.
I disagree, Kelly. I think it's going to be the software. Memory. I think it's going to be the software. 64 gigabytes is plenty. What you can do with the software is going to determine the future of the iPad. How usable
it
is.
You're both right. and I'm not saying that to be wishy-washy. I think you're both right. I think that we're going to see increased capacity and that we're going to see big software changes that, and as a combination, they make new devices very compelling.
A whole
so
more
do
than
you
the
think
sum
it's
going to
be divergent from that iPad OS and iPhone OS are going to diverge a little bit because you're going to be able to do different stuff on the iPad than you can on the iPhone?
Yes, but I don't think it will be in significant ways where we have the divergence.
Okay.
I think the core operation will be the same and that the divergence will be additional features for the iPad simply because of its form factor.
Okay. I can agree with that. I think that's something that's been a long time coming.
Now, we're almost completely out of time, and we haven't even hit the second topic.
I know.
So we'll have to keep it short, and I will apologize in advance to you, my dear listeners, because we're going to run a couple minutes over, because I really wanted to dive into this other topic. Kelly, you have a piece you've been working on about Duke University and what they've been doing with their technology for students. So fill us in on that, please.
Okay, so I got to thinking about it being back to school time, and I remembered having read somewhere a long time ago that somewhere there was a college that had given all of their incoming freshmen iPods. And I wondered kind of how that went at the time and what they were doing now. And I couldn't remember the university or anything. So I did a little bit of research and discovered it was Duke University. Duke University in the 2004 school year, the school year that started at the end of 2004, gave incoming freshmen iPods. And the iPods had voice recorders. Belkin donated voice recorders to go with all of those. So I got in touch with Duke University, spoke with some people over there, had some really interesting conversations. That that program turned into the Duke Digital Initiative, DDI. And what they do is they look for emerging technology, things that are cool, things that are interesting, things that are coming up that could end up being a big deal to people, overall. So like when the iPad came out, they paid a lot of attention to it. It seemed like something that was really going to make an impact. When the iPhone came out, as the iPod evolved into the iPod Touch and got a camera and more capability, those kind of things. They continue to sort of figure out if there's anything they can do to work with this new technology and how it would impact education, and then take that and sort of run with it. And if it turns out to be a successful program, it stops being part of Duke Digital Initiative and just becomes part of regular course offerings, part of the curriculum, depending on what class you're taking. So one of the examples they gave me was language classes. Faculty can distribute, reading a paragraph in Spanish or French or whatever, and students could record themselves reading the same thing and give the audio back to the teacher and get reviews, of that. It was a lot more interactive. And they started recording classes, not just audio, but video. So they were already sort of building an iTunes U system like 3 years before there was iTunes U. So they were one of the first universities to jump on iTunes U with classes, because they had already been doing a lot of this stuff already. They have a real spirit over there of, let's try this and see what happens. Let's see how this goes. Let's see what works and what doesn't work. And it was really interesting to find out how the program that started with giving incoming freshmen iPods has turned into the program they have today, where they have loaners of like flip video cameras. They have iPod touches. They have iPads. And they have all this kind of stuff that they're doing right now. A couple that they're working on are Google Glass and 3D printing. And they're looking at also 3D video and 4K video as things that are emerging. Not necessarily like we think this is the future, but they're things that are making enough noise that it's something they're turning their attention to. And it's really interesting to find out, particularly from an organization that is both large and educational, because neither of those are known for their adoption speeds. it was really interesting to find this faction within a large educational institution that their whole attitude was, let's try it and see how it goes. What does that do? How does this work? What could we do with this to make higher learning a better experience for our faculty and for our students? And it was really cool to get to talk to them about that.
That's awesome. And I'm glad you did that research and found out what they're up to. And it's so cool to see what started off as an experiment as something that's grown and evolved and has become something that's really useful for the faculty and the students both. That's just awesome.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see what they're up to and how things have changed for them as a result of this. They have Duke Forest, which is there on campus, and they can, instead of sending people out to write down a bunch of stuff in notebooks and then come back and enter it into a computer, they just take the computer with them and take pictures with an iPod Touch and record exactly what it is with precise latitude and longitudinal reading, because they can get that location data out of the iPod Touch. So they can do all this kind of stuff. And, some of it's more efficient. Some of it is stuff they couldn't do before. And it's really great to see somebody trying that in an educational setting. I think it's really, really, I'm fascinated by it.
That's awesome. Thank you for doing the research and writing that one up.
Certainly.
And of course, we'll have a link to that in the show notes. And we really do need to wrap up. So,
okay.
So I'm just going to have to say thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today. I always love the insights that you guys bring to the show. And we'll have to do this again really soon.
You're very welcome.
You should do it like every day.
That's just crazy talk.